It is 93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia, 50 years of rock and roll history, and we will celebrate more live music coming next May on the MMRBQ with several incredible bands, including a fine lady who we have the pleasure of, the company of, on the telephone right now, and her longtime manager and friend. I speak of Joan Jett and Kenny Laguna. Greetings to both of you guys.
How you doing?
Excellent. So nice to have you on our bill, Joan. We've tried for a number of years, and the schedules haven't meshed up. But our festival every late spring, early summer is sort of the kickoff after, and you lived out here for a long time. So you know when it gets to be March and April, people are just getting, I can't take another minute of winter. And then finally spring comes, and that's the prelude to summer and all the great summer shows. So
yeah,
ours is kind of the first of the summer.
Everybody should be in a good mood, you know. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, that first day getting out, you know, after everyone's been locked in all for months. It's going to be great.
I heard, Joan, that you got named somewhere down the line as the godmother of punk. I've never heard that stick in terms of you being referenced that way a lot. You've obviously heard it, but do many people refer to you that way?
Not in real life. You know what I mean? Not really.
I've seen it in print a lot of times.
You have?
But okay. I mean real life, Kenny. You know, like, well, real life. Yeah, I guess.
Well, let me
I guess
say
as,
that
as
I'm
a press
quite,
term or something.
Well, I'm quite certain you're the queen of rock and roll and the godmother of punk. I think that.
I like that. Joan Jett and Kenny Laguna joining us on the phone, talking about the upcoming MMRBQ and so many other great moments that you've been celebrating over the last number of years. But going back to meeting Kenny, I think working on the film some time ago, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Kenny, but you advised Joan to not have a band, in fact, go forward as a solo artist, but Joan, you insisted on having a band. Is that accurate?
That is 100% true.
And you...
Yeah, I wanted to be in a band. I wouldn't know how to be a solo artist.
So she moved back. She moved back east, so that we could tour with the cities all put close together. And she brought with her three lunatics. She was the fourth lunatic, and brought them. And all of a sudden, I'm dealing with a 15-year-old bass player and craziness, which is what I was telling her. But it worked out pretty good.
I should say it did.
We started building a big audience. As a matter of fact, MMR is one of the very few stations. We used to have a list that we called the Blackheart stations, the stations that took a shot with Joan. With no label, well, we had our label, but we were selling our records out of the back of a car. You had a program director named Charlie Kendall.
The great Charlie Kendall, yes, indeed.
And you took a shot. And you're probably aware Joan was born in Philadelphia, so that, you know, that fit nicely. But Philly was one of the places that launched her career.
Was it Lansdowne, Joan? Is that accurate?
Well, that's where my grandparents lived, so I went there a lot. But I was actually born at Lankenau Hospital, so I don't know what town that's in.
That's
exactly.
Wynwood.
I don't think it's Lansdowne, but it seems every time I mention it to an area person, they go, "Oh yeah, Lankenau." So,
and is it true that you put an ad in the L.A. Weekly, because some of the legendary bands, going back to Black Sabbath and more, started as a result of, you know, just a little note on a billboard or an ad in a local music paper? And is that where the original Blackhearts came from? That ad?
That is. Yep, that's true. Back at the L.A. Weekly, Kenny?
I think it was.
Joan Jett looking for three good men.
bass,
guitar, and drums. And then I think we, you know, held some auditions.
That's right, you did, at SIR. They had auditions and put together the band. And then we flew you all to Europe, where you did a few shows and showed some promise, and eventually moved to New York, and we started touring. Because we didn't have a lot of money, and you wouldn't get paid a lot. We could come home, play Philadelphia, and come home. We could play Hartford, and come home. We could play Allentown, and come home. And so we started doing that on a regular basis, and all of a sudden we became a gigantic club band. And we had this record that nobody wanted to put out, and Do You Want to Touch Me and Bad Reputation were on your station back before you were born.
Well, I've been here 37 years, actually. So,
oh, my.
And Charlie Kendall, the man you referenced, is the guy who hired me. So,
that's great.
In my line of work, DJs don't stay around that long, and stations don't stay around that long, but we're blessed this year in that MMR is celebrating 50 years being on the air, and for a rock and roll station, and not just, limping by, 50 years thriving. With all kinds of generations of people listening to us, so we're very grateful.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a miracle, and you know the radio business is like being a running back in the NFL. I mean, the jocks don't last, so you're one of the blessed few.
Yeah, I consider it that way as well. Well, the same thing with you, Joan. As you look back on your career, you've had a lot of acknowledgments, particularly in the last few years. But you know, when you think about it. I know you are the kind of person that stays in present time. That's all fine, but what are we doing now? But you have to have those moments where you reflect back and go, wow, this has been quite a ride.
Totally. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's hard to believe it. You know, it's surreal, very surreal, and I'm very blessed. That's the one thing every day I'm grateful, every day, several times a day, you know, I'm grateful, I'm recognized, and I'm blessed, and I'm very lucky. So, you know, I think that's important, too, to just have that gratitude about wherever you are in life, you know. It could always be worse.
Indeed so. And, you know, I think it kind of came to fulfillment when you were inducted into the Hall of Fame. Nirvana, was that the year before you were inducted?
Yes. Nirvana was the year before.
So Nirvana is inducted in 2014, I think that was.
Yes.
And Dave Grohl, you had toured with the Foo Fighters. Dave Grohl wants you to get up and sing. I know you've been asked a million times, but I've got to know what that was like as you're, you know, fronting Nirvana, essentially.
At the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right. And then later, I think you played at some club or some theater
yeah,
and kind of
yeah,
surprised
but by
people.
By then, the pressure was off, you know what I mean?
Right.
That, Pierre, it was petrifying. Getting a call, you know, was one of those things where you had both emotions. It was like, oh, my God, I'm scared shitless. The reason I'm scared shitless is because I know I have to say yes. I have to do this. I mean, how as a rock and roll fan could you say no? As a Nirvana fan, how can you, you know? So that was not a possibility, saying no. Being asked was such an honor, and so I just, I didn't want to read into it too much and think about it too much, so I just practiced and got it together, and luckily we had some chances to go through the song before we had to actually play it that night. But strangely, I was very calm, which is not normal. I should have a certain level of anxiety, and I'm glad I wasn't petrified because that makes it tough too, but I was strangely calm, which then gave me a sense it was all right, you know, just karmically that I was doing this. And I was just, I was calm, but it was an amazing, amazing experience to play and sing with them. And I remember turning around and looking at Dave and just seeing his hair flying and thinking about, wow, it must be really cool to play these songs. And Pat Smear, I've known since he was in the Germs because I produced that band many, many years ago, in like 1980 or whatever it was. And so he's a Nirvana, and I look at him, and he's grinning ear to ear.
And Chris Novoselic on the bass.
Yes, and he was just, I mean, he was so funny. I think he's the one that got me into the Hall of Fame because he was bitching afterwards saying, you know, can you believe she's not in the Hall of Fame? So I think they guilted him into it.
At that ceremony, was Courtney Love there? And if so, she had to have loved your performance, but I hope she did anyway.
She was there, but I didn't speak to her. You know, I don't know her really enough to go up and say hi. And I don't know, she was around. I know she said hi to Dave and stuff, but we didn't come face to face.
Such a cool moment.
But I'm fine with her, as far as I know. I've got no problem with Courtney.
That's 2014. The next year, you and the Black Hearts are inducted, and there's a great video, if people haven't seen it, of both of you, Kenny Laguna and Joan Jett, accepting. And that moment, now you'd been on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame stage, so maybe that prepared you. Maybe it didn't, because, you know, you're... The light is shining on Nirvana, even if you're the front person for it the year before. But now the light is completely on Joan Jett and the Black Hearts and your music and what you've given, and it's a lot, to the rock and roll community. What is that like?
That was really overwhelming, and I think probably that's probably maybe the best moment of all of this, just because it all everything came full circle.
There was two Beatles. The two remaining Beatles were there.
Well, that's the first thing I saw when I walked out was that a standing ovation started, and the first ones up were Ringo and Paul McCartney.
Wow.
and Yoko Ono, and everyone else got up, and it hit me. I'm like, holy shit! You know, all these people, they're standing up for me, and like, you know, it was just really weird. But, you know, again, a blessing, not sort of a, oh yeah, I deserve this, man, it's about time. It was just like really grateful about it. And
is she allowed to say on your radio?
Oh,
station?
Yeah, I got a little beeper. We're taping this. I don't give a so.
Did I say
a lot of times?
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Please, it's fine. It's just a thrill to have you on. We won't take too much more of your time, but yeah, of course you can say that moment, you know, and that's a heavy room of heavy hitters. You know, I've been to the ceremony a few times, and, you know, when you see, you know, a table that's got Bruce or a table that's got Sting or any number of different people at that table, and they're all there, you know, for the same purpose, it's pretty damn cool.
And so many of them I've worked with on some level, you know, throughout my career.
Jerry Lee Lewis was there.
Wow.
I remember thinking, oh, my God, you got Paul McCartney, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Ringo. I mean, that's a lot. And there were more.
A lot more, Kenny.
Yeah, I went one year, and it was at the Waldorf Astoria before they moved it to the bigger place. And I had a floor pass. We had this table way in the back, but still, I'm walking along, and one table had Bruce and Patty. The next table had U2. The next table had The Who, because Bono was inducting U2. The next table had The Kinks and Graham Nash of Crosby, Stills & Nash, a fellow Englishman who was inducting The Kinks. It was just like, oh, my God, you know, and it was just one thing after the other, and it's just like, there they are. And
I was there that night, and so was Joan. Our company managed the Kinks then.
Oh, wow. I'm crazy about the Kinks.
Do you remember how great Ray was?
No, he was funny.
He said, I look around, I see everybody all tarted up, and I realize rock and roll is finally respectable. And everybody started cheering, and he went, what a drag.
I remember that. I so love that band, and it's still so underrated, I think.
Totally.
Graham Nash, you know, worked with them in the early days when he was in the Hollies, and he brought to attention, I think, as was proper to do, the fact that, you know, the Davies brothers always fought, as brother bands are known to do, but pretty wickedly at times, and they made that kind of part of the fun of the induction. And I wish they would get back together, but it is what it is. I wanted to ask you, Joan, also about another moment from the Unvarnished album. A great record. And again, you had toured with the Foo Fighters. And there's this song. And I, whenever I play a block of you, I put it in to this day. It's called Any Weather. And it is just such a marvelous song. And was it you that went to Dave with it, or did he come to you? How did you bring him into that project?
I just kind of attacked him after we played together and we had done some shows. I didn't attack him, but, you know, I wanted to write a song with him, and I had a riff and an idea, and I thought, you know, we could write something cool. So he actually was gracious enough to give me some
time. We were in a hotel in Los Angeles, and Dave pulled up in his car by himself. He came upstairs, and he goes, I'm taking Joan. You can't come. And he kidnapped her for 3 days, and she slept at his house with his kids, and they came up with that.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. You know, he's got their own studio, and I mean, I think he has stuff in his house, but I think they had their own studio to do things in, I guess, at will. But we did a demo, right? We did a little demo because we didn't really complete the song, but we did a demo of, you know, the bones of it. And then I took it and finished it up. And, yeah, so that's Any Weather. And I thought it was a great song. And, you know, I always think things are going to be a hit, but, you know, nobody hears it like I do, I guess.
Well, now, I heard it the same way, and to me, it is still a hit. I mean, the test is when you hear it a couple of years later, does it hold up? And I just played it a few weeks ago, and it does. You know, and the idea that he's on the drums, you're on rhythm guitar, and I heard you even got some crew people to do background vocals. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Yeah, we did. Whoever was in the room that day.
And the two of them played all the instruments.
Wow.
There's one version with the Blackhearts, but the one that we serviced to radio, that was just Joan and Dave playing every single instrument.
That is so cool. What was it like, just on a side note, to, you actually slept at his house for a couple of days while you're getting that together?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. It
right.
just saves time because you're together and you don't have to spend all the time, you know, going from a hotel to meeting up to, you know, small talk. And, you know, just it cuts out a lot of, you know, bullshit.
Right.
And especially, you know, I was grateful that he gave me that time because he's in the middle of so much stuff.
Right.
You know, he's got all kinds of things going on. The Foo Fighters and other projects, and I'm sure people were on him all the time with different things, and the fact that he gave me that 3 days. I mean, I know in my own life, giving up time is precious.
He's as delightful, and you always know when you talk to crew people, and I have a lot of friends who are on different crews, and the crew people, the artist may tell the story one way. The crew people go, no, it's not that way. This is what really happened. And, you know, and they never talk publicly, but they'll tell you when you're having a few drinks or something. And crew people, to a person, just rave about how decent a human being he is. And I found that to be true in my limited experiences. They came through and played one of our 50th anniversary shows last summer, and he just couldn't have been cooler.
Yep.
One last thing I wanted to ask you. I saw you a couple of years ago at the Academy of Music here, and you joined up. I mean, the list of people you've worked with from, you know, you've been on stage with Bruce Springsteen, you've done the Nirvana thing, you've toured with Green Day, Foo Fighters, Def Leppard, you name the band, you've been out with them over the years. But I saw a one-off benefit for the Teenage Cancer Fund, which is a big cause of the Who. And Roger Daltrey and his solo band were playing in Philly at the Academy of Music to help out our children's hospital here. You were the opening act, and you also, I believe, sang a duet with Roger. And it was great seeing you in that setting with, you know, a heavy hitter. And he clearly loves you as well, and he was raving about you at various points during the performance.
Do you remember that, Joni?
Yes,
I remember the
I sure
song
do.
You did. He sprung that on her like 10 minutes before she had to do it.
I don't remember what song we sang.
I don't remember it either, but you pulled it off.
Summertime Blues.
Okay. But he, I mean, you know, somebody like that, who's pretty heavyweight, the fact that he loved you as much as he did, and it was clear as a bell, just from an audience perspective, that, you know, moments like that, that's just a moment in this wonderful life you've had. But a moment like that strikes me as something particularly pristine and, you know, cool to freeze that.
It's so amazing because, yeah, I mean, the Who really had a lot to do with our success as well, or even us getting a chance to have success, to be able to record. Because Kenny may have mentioned that he worked with the Who organization and lived in England for a while and produced bands like Steve Gibbons' band. What was the other one, Kenny? A couple of the other ones?
Oh, there was a bunch. It's not important.
Yeah, a bunch of stuff, but he did things for the Who. And through them, Kenny and I were in England trying to get a record deal. And just funny enough, one night, Pete Townsend came over to the flat that we were staying at, and Kenny was talking to him about trying to get this record deal, and Pete said, go talk to our manager, Bill Kurbisley. And Kenny did, and Bill just said, you know what, go into our studio, record what you need to record, and just pay us when you can. Because the guy who we were going to try to make a record deal with, Bill didn't think it was a good idea. So he just said, go do your thing, pay us when you can, which we did. And if it wasn't for that, I mean, that we went in there and recorded what became Bad Reputation. And now we had something to attempt to sell to labels. But without that, we wouldn't have gotten anywhere. We would have been struggling to even record. So
But the funny ending is we couldn't get a label to put out the record, so we put it out ourselves, and that's why Blackheart Records is still around today, all these years later.
So cool.
And it's good nobody signed us, because we still own all our stuff.
That's amazing.
And if somebody had signed us, we wouldn't.
Right.
So, really, the rock and roll gods were looking out for us. And it started with something like that, with The Who, you know, saying, please, go record.
See, this
and pay
is...
us when you can. And we did pay them back.
I have no doubt of that.
You know, our history goes back a long ways. And we've been lucky enough to play with The Who a few times and tour with them.
That's just... another group of wonderful people. And Roger and Pete with their passion for teen cancer. I mean, they're unbelievable, really.
I love it when you see a band like this and they're still pulling it off. I saw the Stones a couple of years ago, and it was magnificent. You know, Mick Jagger rehearses that band up one side and down the other, and he was running on a football-size stadium runway and singing.
That's amazing.
And this is no lip-syncing. I got pit tickets, and he's dancing and running up the runway and back, playing harmonica. Keith was running up the runway and back. And when you see a band that's been around, that's got a history, and doesn't just go through the motions, all right, here's the five songs.
Right.
That you can tell. It's the ability to take a song that's 10, 20, 30, 40, maybe 50 years old and make it sound like it just came off the presses yesterday. That's the people that have that ability are the ones that are so special. And you have that ability. And every time I've seen you, you bring that.
Thank you. Yeah, I've not seen the Stones live ever, if you can believe that.
Well, they're touring this summer. You've got to see them.
Oh, I have to. I'll have to make sure I figure it out.
Well, speaking of this summer, we will see you at our MMRBQ in May. And it's just great that you and the Blackhearts tour and keep this wonderful music alive and continue to make new music. Kenny Laguna, longtime manager, and Joan Jett, a longtime, both of you, friends of this radio station, as we are in our 50th year. And you and the Blackhearts are how many years? 37, 38?
Since 79, whatever that is.
What a great...
Almost, yeah, 39.
What a great run you've had. And it continues. So thank you for continuing to do it. And thank you for coming back and continuing to renew your friendship with MMR on our festival this coming May. It's going to be a great time.
Yeah, great, man. We'll see you.
Thank you both so much.
We'll see you in Philly.
All right, Kenny. Joan, all the best. You have a great holiday season, and we'll see you in the new year.
Same to you, Pierre.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.